I am George Knapp, listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Folks, at the start of this year, I got a bit of a health scare, and it kick-started me to getting fitter, healthier, and generally looking after myself better. A healthier breakfast was high on my priority list, and it should be for you too. Magic Spoon is the perfect way to get in your morning protein, eating cereal that tastes like it did when you were a kid, without all the bad stuff. I can promise you there is nothing unidentified in this cereal. The variety pack has four flavours, including cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs. There are only 140 calories per serving. It's keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free, and low carb. It's delicious but super healthy cereal that really brings joy to your mornings, afternoons, or actually any time of day. Go to magicspoon.com/thatufo to grab a variety pack and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code THATUFO at checkout to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee, so if for any reason you don't like it, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to get your delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/thatUFO and use that code THATUFO to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I have a returning guest who was last on the podcast at the beginning of 2022. We actually spent New Year's Eve recording at the end of 2021, so there was no New Year's Eve party for us, but it was a pleasure to speak to a gentleman who is a former UK intelligence officer and paratrooper, with more than 20 years producing strategic and operational advice to Fortune 500 companies, aerospace and government clients. He shares his interest in post-quantum military technology, UFOs, UAPs and geopolitics, and also international relations. He is also a member of SCU, an organisation of which we have spoken to several of its members on the podcast. I'd like to welcome back Frank Milburn. Frank, how are we?
Mate, Andy, thank you very much for having me back.
It's always good to speak to you. Always a pleasure to watch your tweets online as well. Very outspoken, which is no mean feat on UFO Twitter, but people enjoy your responses, your insight, and that's what I've got you back on for. And the wonderful response from the listeners when I mentioned you were coming back on just a few days ago. I was barraged with listener questions, so I've tried to get as much of those into this as possible. But I want to ask you a few questions first, Frank, obviously. We are fast approach. Oh, very quickly, if folks want to hear Frank's background and some of that kind of stuff, go back to the interview from earlier this year. It was in January 2022, and you'll hear all that. We're not just skipping over it, but we've done that one before. Frank, we are fast approaching the 31st of October deadline, where we are expecting the next unclassified report on UAP from the Department of Defense in the United States. And I wonder, what are you expecting from this? Are we likely to get fed anything of note, or is this again going to be one where the good stuff's kept behind closed doors and we're left fighting for scraps?
I'll be honest with you, I like with the first one, I don't expect anything that will prejudice sources, methods, platforms. Okay, that's always going to be the case when you're talking public, but I hope, and I really hope, that because Congress has got the teeth between the bit effectively, and has in the legislation from NDAA to the IAA, Congress has been clamping down on the intelligence community and also on the DOD. So I'm very much hoping that we'll have a much more positive outcome.
While these reports are scheduled every 3 months or so, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, are we just going to keep getting sent out stop gaps and paperweights from a public point of view? Is there any rhyme or reason for these unclassified reports to even be published if there's never going to be anything of note in them? Or is there an opportunity there for something to come out that people can go, ah, that's interesting, or that takes the conversation forward?
I think all the good stuff is still going to be kept under wraps, and it's going to be in closed hearings with Congress. But I don't know, because I haven't seen the upcoming report. but I hope that there will be, you know, nuggets that that people can follow for, you know, process of FOIA.
We've recently heard from the US Navy, a US Navy spokesperson, that the release of further UFO videos would, quote unquote, harm national security. Would it harm national security, in your opinion?
Well, I actually spoke with Chris Mellon in the last 3 days, and he said to me, I know the person who made that classification choice. I've heard the... So he's saying that basically it's a national security problem, and that to release those videos would be to it would expose American platforms and capabilities. I've also heard another voice, and I can't say who it is, but he's told me that basically those Navy videos would expose something that is so indisputably non-human that it would be game-changing. And that the U.S. Navy, the U.S. government would never be able to put, the genie back in the bottle, so to speak.
So ultimately, is that the issue then, that they still want this to go away? Because if they do have that smoking gun, as you say, and we hear about these various different videos and photographs that may or may not exist, and they have something, like you say, that is undisputably non-human, or it's not ours, it's not Russian, it's not Chinese. I mean, it's one of those, look at this video, and they can put it on Oprah. It's the Oprah video, if you want to call it that. They can put it on Fox, CNN, BBC News, Sky News, and the general public would look at it and say, that's not human. If that exists, is it just a case of, that's not going to come out because we do not want the public to know? Or is it still a case of, there is a process to this, and it could still come out eventually? What do you think?
I think there's two things. I think there's one, the US Navy and the US military in general, they have, I'm certain that they have, imagery that shows beyond reasonable doubt that, these craft entering American airspace, British, air defense region are not human. And I also think that, that it may be game changing for them. And that the US government doesn't want to divulge that.
Game-changing in what sense for them?
Well, game-changing in terms of it's something that's indisputably not human. But at the same time, I'm saying, well, if you're going to hide these, this imagery, then, and you're saying, if the US Navy is saying that it is, against the national security interest of the United States, and that it could threaten. Platforms and, sources and methods, then why can we not see, radar data, imagery, and other sensor data from, the 1960s or the 1970s, and from satellites, from platforms that are now obsolete, and that the enemy, Russians or Chinese know are obsolete, and that therefore offers, no insight into American capabilities. Why can't we see those, that kind of data?
Let me ask you this as a layman, and I'm sure there are people who listen to this with backgrounds in military and various pieces of equipment, and I hear from listeners like that, but most people listening are like myself and don't have any expertise in all these sorts of kind of different technologies that are used. Why can't one of these videos that is so clear be released, but with all that other information scrubbed? Surely you can blur it out. You could take it away and literally just show us, we've got this picture or video of this particular object. Here it is. And to hell with the rest of it that gives away platforms, methods, locations and such. Or is that too blue sky thinking?
Well, I think it goes back to, if you look at the preliminary assessment that came out in June of last year, okay, you had the National Aviation Intelligence Manager, who contributed majorly to the report, right? And the ODNI said the National Intelligence Aviation Manager contributed this report. If you look at who the guy is, he's a two-star U.S. Air Force general. He's a career U.S. Air Force intelligence officer, yeah? So you have to ask yourself, why isn't the U.S. Air Force contributing, because I'm thinking Spanish, like mouse is more in Spanish. Sorry, I speak Spanish. why isn't the U.S. Air Force contributing more in terms of in terms of data? I personally think it's a cover up, and I think it's an ongoing cover up from 1947, and the U.S. Navy has basically said, well, excuse my language. It's like, why the bleep should we release more videos if the U.S. Air Force, in the preliminary assessment, hasn't been contributing to, the work of the UAP Task Force?
Would the Navy releasing better quality footage and clearer footage not force the Air Force's hand? Because surely once that would be in public domain, and even if they gave us something better, like the we hear about the gimbal video, and that apparently there are other objects on screen, or at one point it turns and then shoots off. If they show us that extra piece, and that if that indeed does exist, would that not make the Air Force and other organizations come in, surely, because the public would get even more on board at that point?
Yeah, but you have to think about it from a bureaucratic point of view. The point of view of Office of Naval Intelligence, or the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, right? It's not to make UAP data available to the public. They're not about transparency.
So very much, you reckon it's still a case of, even with someone like myself looking at the glass being half full, we're seeing forms of progress, there's still those that want this to go away again. And there's still that opportunity that enough has been released that it could still go away. And organisations like the Air Force are just going to stay out it for as long as possible in the hope that it does just disappear.
Well, let's look at the recent amendment to the Intelligence Authorization Act for 2023, right? So mm-hmm. It's called the so-called whistleblower amendment. It talks about, okay, if you have an NDA, you cannot be reprieved for coming forward and offering your knowledge. But at the same time, yeah. It's like, well, I'm saying the terms of the new legislation say, if you are discriminated against for working against your NDAA, then you can bring a private case, but then you're out of your pocket yourself until such time as the government and the Inspector General recognizes that you have been discriminated against. But also, if you are a private contractor, then how would you prove in a court if you come forward to Congress? How would you prove that you're not being discriminated against by, private contractor, that you've been moved to Alaska, or that you've been, overlooked for promotion? And I'd say the third part, most important in my view, and Andy, I've done a lot of research on, directed energy weapons and, malign hostile activity against, scientists working in the UAP field. It's, if you are party to something that is malign, if you know that somebody's been murdered in furtherance of the cover-up, if you know that, some aerospace company has gained advantage because the American government has given them crash retrieval technology, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Would you come forward when you know that other scientists have been subject to directed energy weapons, to harassment, to poisonings, and also to murder?
Yeah, I think that there is that aspect of it that people see, especially on social media. Well, there's going to be immunity. There's going to be immunity language, so people can just come forward now, forgetting at the end of the day, there's a human being on the end of that that has to then make a decision, that may have a family, they may have a career. And it's not as if they're going to come forward, say what they know, and then go back to day-to-day life or their day-to-day job. Everything changes for them. And I suppose it stands to reason that it still puts a lot of people at risk. And again, whether people like him or not, if you look at what Luis Elizondo has done, coming forward, sharing what he has and doing what he's done, it's not all been a walk in the park for him. If you look at the abuse he's received, that his family's received, the targeted attacks as well, that's only probably going to be even worse or amplified when that's taken onto a national and international stage, coming forward and testifying in Congress. So it's not just as easy as it as coming forward and, yep, do you know what? I worked on the crash retrieval program. Here's what I know. And then, cool, am I done? Back to the day job.
My research is that people who have been involved in anti-gravity research, anything to do with UAP propulsion, at least one of them has been murdered, somebody that I know personally, okay? And this has been passed to the highest levels of the American government. I've had it acknowledged that that person was murdered, even though they won't acknowledge it publicly, okay?
And again, that's that sort of stuff, no doubt, is at least known in those communities that that happens and that goes on. So again, that's a huge block to people still choosing to come forward on this subject. I would ask Frank, someone with your expertise and knowledge of this, is there a way that you can see to get people to come forward and to get them to discuss this subject in a safe environment without putting themselves at those sorts of risks?
Yeah, well, very basically, you'd have to offer those people the kind of protection that the equivalent scenario would be, the equivalent scenario would be taking people into witness protection, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the equivalent scenario. But again, you're asking people then to give up their life, to give up everything they've known and to go into witness protection to have a new life. So I don't see that as viable. And I also believe that the malign actors who are behind the murders of UAP scientists from 1947 onwards to the people that I know, these kind of people, they have a far reach. So, being protected by US Marshals isn't going to protect you.
Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Day to day, life comes at you fast, and like anyone, I can get stuck focusing on problems rather than looking for solutions. Whether that's in my professional 9-to-5, on the podcast, or even just as a parent. It can be tough to train your brain to think differently, but it is possible. There is no better time to start making a change than today, and when you finally learn to find your own solutions, there is no better feeling. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish those goals you've been struggling to. For many, using BetterHelp has allowed them to unload stress, heal emotional scars, or even help with anxiety and depression. For me, the flexibility of being able to access online help through messaging on the app or even voice or video calls is a win, not to mention it's convenient and affordable. All you need to do is fill in a very brief survey and BetterHelp will match you with a therapist that suits your needs. You can of course swap your therapist at any time. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/thatufo today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/thatufo. Understandable. I want to ask one of the gentlemen who is now tasked with heading up the AARO, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARO, is Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick. And I wonder how much do you know about Dr. Kirkpatrick or Sean? And have you heard anything as to how he is progressing within that role?
No, what I've read about him, what I've seen about him, he's an ultimate professional. I would see him in the same vein as Dr. Taylor and Dr. Gary Nolan. Okay, I don't know the guy personally, but he seems to be, ultimately professional and ultimately suitable for the job.
And he's someone who's come in without that seemingly UFO bias or UFO knowledge, UAP knowledge. Do you think that's the best way to go, to have someone at the head of that sort of organization who is completely neutral, we hope, and is just looking at the facts and looking at the data?
Yeah, I do. But I also still think that DOD and IC will drag, they will always try to drag and obfuscate and evade what they are legally bound to, report to Congress. And I go back to, my directed energy weapons, investigations. Until such time as Congress investigates the attacks upon American scientists on U.S. soil who are engaged in, free energy research and UAP propulsion, then democracy will not exist.
And that's not something we've necessarily talked about in our last interview or this one, those sorts of attacks. But for listeners who might not be familiar, Frank, can you fill us in on some of the background or details on that?
Without going into, I have validated, vetted information that at least one scientist who was working on UAP propulsion and free energy was murdered. I'm still trying to figure out whether that was by China, Russia, or by an agent of an American aerospace and defense company, because they didn't want that person to reinvent the wheel. That's all I can say about it at the moment.
And by directed energy weapons, are we talking something similar to a Havana syndrome type disorder, or
exactly like Havana syndrome? Yeah. It's very easy to have a vehicle mounted weapon. I have heard reports from people that I know, apart from my friend who was murdered. You have your face in a window. Somebody outside is in a 4x4. They have a mobile directed energy weapon, and basically fry your face.
Which is terrifying technology. And actually, I'm going to expand on it a little bit as one of the listener questions asks about that later on, Frank. I want to ask, has anything changed for you, Frank, since we last spoke in terms of your thinking or understanding in the UFO subject? That's a 9-month time frame from, late December to now, as we record this, it's middle of September 2022. Is there anything that's come up within that time that's made you expand your thinking or change your line of thinking in terms of UFOs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've become an experiencer de nuevo. Sorry, that's in Spanish. I've become a, I'm trying to think how to say it in English. I've become an experiencer again. And there's no doubt in my mind that even I was talking with Colonel John Alexander, mm-hmm. who is the godfather of everything spooky and weird at the Pentagon. And he has been a mentor to me, a total mentor to me in every sense of the word. And in 2020, I experienced what you would call the predator from Skinwalker.
And was that this year, sorry, or did you say 2020?
That was 2020, and then I had poltergeist activity in my house. I still have poltergeist activity in my house, but I've kind of fucked off most of it because, most of them don't want to fuck with a British Army paratrooper.
And do you care to elaborate any more on your experience from this year, your refreshed experience?
My experience was, like a predator being, and it was in my house, and I basically told it, go fuck yourself, and it fucked off because it doesn't like British Army Airborne.
And was that a physical entity, non-physical?
A physical entity.
But again,
look, no, go on. It's like people in general. It's like humans, anybody in general. They don't like British Army paratroopers because we're moody, we're aggressive, and we get our own way, right? So nobody likes to fuck with us.
So that very direct approach helped you in that situation, anyway.
Well, absolutely. It's like my attitude was: you're an entity. You're not airborne. You don't have a Marine beret. You never served in combat. You don't have the parachute wings of, the elite British Army Parachute Regiment. Therefore, go fuck yourself.
I want to ask you, Frank, before we get to listener questions, if you were to head up a similar UAP task force type organization in the UK, and just for listeners who weren't aware and who may not have heard Frank speak previously, he lives off at the UK, he's in Spain. If you were to head up an organization like the UAP task force in the UK, what would your first steps be? Who would your first go-tos be, and how would you go about it?
Well, the first people that I'd recruit would be British people, but like Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon. And I would also force, if I were in charge and I had unlimited recourses, I would force the Royal Air Force to divulge all those instances where UAP entered the UK air defense region, and all those instances where that I know about, where UK aircraft, fighter intercept aircraft, intercepted UAP and also used weapons against them.
And we discussed this back in December, and it's something we've talked about often on the podcast, that the UK is just far better at keeping this subject at bay in terms of it escaping into political conversation or even the general public, just due to a bit of an apathy from the British mainstream to discuss it. Do you see any change in that again from the last 9 months? Or has there just been too many other topics of conversation, such as, Brexit, the kind of disarray in UK political scene, obviously the tail end of COVID, and then the war in Ukraine coming up, that the UFO conversation is just not getting anywhere near the coverage that it will or should?
I know from my service that British military intelligence and RAF intelligence know about interceptions of UAP in the UK air defence airspace. But I don't anticipate any of that coming out anytime soon.
And what happens in general with those reports? We hear obviously now, we're so familiar with people like Commander Fravor, with Alex Dietrich, Ryan Graves, and these other military personnel who have come forward and shared their stories. I imagine there are many similar names, but from a UK point of view, who just haven't come forward. Is there still that stigma here in the UK that they just don't want to do that? Or are there other reasons for that silence?
Well, I'll tell you something, Andy. I know a bloke who was what you'd call increment. You know what the increment is?
No.
The increment is it's a platoon of special forces that is permanently assigned to the Foreign Office. Okay? It's like JSOC in the United States. They carry out, on behalf of the British government, the most difficult problems that the UK faces in terms of assassination of nuclear scientists, elimination of terrorists. Okay? And this is all off the books. Also, as well, I know for a fact that that unit had a crash retrieval, capability. And I was told by the head of that unit that the UK has retrieved at least one craft and also bodies.
And with any inclination as to what happens thereafter, is that something that we very much would then give our US counterparts kind of carte blanche to take over? Or is that something you think we deal with ourselves?
I would imagine, based on my own experience, where we had Americans, I worked with special forces. At every level, there were American special forces. I would imagine that the Brits would have shared that with the Americans.
Who very much seem to lead the way in this, and I imagine our Five Eyes counterparts have the same sorts of agreements that it's handed over to the US.
Well, I'm not saying the Americans lead stuff. I mean, if you look at American Delta Force, American Delta Force is a copy of the SAS, right? The American Delta Force is a direct copy of SAS. If you look at Navy SEALs, it's a direct copy of the Special Boat Service. You know, the British military has always been revolutionary in terms of like special forces, and the Americans and other governments have always copied what we do.
No, of course. I mean, in terms of the UFO subject, though, that they very much seem to have the lead or the control, at least, of materials, crash programs, the data, the research.
And it they seems do, from the but outside, in terms of that crash retrieval, I would not see personally the British sharing that with the Americans unless they had some very good reason to do so, and you know, some very good payback. Brits are not stupid.
And do you think we would also use private contractors in that sense as well? Or is that something you would expect to be kept in-house?
My experience of British military intelligence, everything to do with UFOs was kept within British military intelligence.
Interesting. Listen, there's a lot of listener questions here. Some of these touch on some of the areas we've already got to, Frank. So I'm going to get to some of these, and they jump all over, but I think listeners are going to like this, and it gives you a chance to stretch your wings a little bit here. Quick shout out to Ronak, who sent in a question asking about Arrow, and that was covered in the answer before. So thanks for that. And thank you, Ronak. Peter wants to know, is there any chance that NATO is able to release any reports or data of UAP encounters? Is it something NATO would even be concerned about, as far as you know?
I live in Spain. And if you look, for example, at you know, the Spanish military intelligence files, the Spanish military intelligence files for the Air Force, they have already emitted a lot of data for UAP.
And in general, is that something you think then NATO brush aside in terms of the larger conversation? Is that left to individual countries to handle and talk about?
Yeah, I think it is. But I think, you know, I speak Spanish, so it's easier for me to look through Spanish airborne files, Spanish Air Force files. So I'm talking airborne because I was airborne, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to look through Spanish Air Force files because I speak Spanish. But they're pretty comprehensive, and there's no doubt in my mind that the Spanish, it's called the Sección de Inteligencia del Mando Aéreo. It's like the intelligence section of the Spanish General Staff of the Air Force. There was no doubt in their minds that UAP exists.
One of my favourite listeners' names coming up next, and a very hard one to say, Slarty Bartfast, has asked that since UAP were detected over Ukraine, what are your thoughts on UAP over war zones? Now, and I've got a follow-up on that. You know, how common are UFO sightings in active war zones? And is it hard to track true anomalous sightings given the technology that must be deployed during a conflict?
They're very common over war zones. But I would say, you know, glory to Ukraine for everything they've done fighting the Russians. As a former professional army paratrooper, I have nothing but admiration for the Ukrainians. And they're actually proved themselves to be exceptionally resilient and exceptionally professional.
I wouldn't disagree. But on the UFO side of things, thinking of Ukraine as an example, given it's the most obvious one at the moment, of course, and it's a horrible situation, and hopefully that's resolved as soon as possible, there must be all kinds of technology being deployed over the skies of Ukraine from US, China, Russia, and others. Is it then difficult, if you are on any of those sides tracking what's in the skies, to pick up what might be something more NHI, non-human, as opposed to what might be some very advanced Chinese, American, or Russian drone?
Well, there won't be anything from China because China doesn't have the reach. But you know, British and American, electronic warfare aircraft and AWACS have been flying around, Ukraine. Okay, so they will have provided a very advanced, radar sensor and electronic picture to the Ukrainian armed forces, so that they can, quite rightly target their Russian oppressors. Okay, I don't know about any UAP incidents, but I would not be surprised based upon the historical record.
And do you think that sort of active war zone, active area of conflict would be a prime candidate for UAP data collection?
Yeah, it would be in terms of... it would be for intelligences, if you want to understand how humans go to war. It's also a very attractive arena for, you know, ex-military blokes, ex-para blokes like me, you know, who want to go to war.
I've got a question on something you mentioned before. This is from Chris Walford. Thanks and hello to Chris. What is Frank's thoughts on private contractors being given the run of crash retrieval programs? Is it something that makes the most sense to you?
It doesn't make the most sense to me, but it makes sense in terms of you know, hiding the program. And I've got no doubt that there are hidden programs within... various departments of the US government, of, you know, the Department of Energy, and also aerospace companies. But I come down this again, right? It's like, if you are an aerospace and defense company, and if you had the capability to offer the United States a five observable platform, that would be the sale of the century, right?
Yeah.
So why haven't we seen these platforms?
What would the answer to that be, do you think?
The answer to that would be was because the American government doesn't have five observable platforms, or they have a five observable platform, but they don't understand it yet. And it's one thing having a five observable platform. It's another thing understanding how to fix it, how to fly it, another thing how to copy it, so that you can make it into, a deployable platform.
And do you think that's where we hear that the technology has been retrieved? They've got it, but we're just so far behind in actively managing to reverse engineer it that we may understand parts of it. There may be basic understanding, but the way I kind of think of it is, if you've seen Independence Day, the movie, where they've got the craft at Area 51, but they don't know really how to use it yet, and it only switches on when the aliens come back to invade. But until then, they were very much at a loss of what this craft, how its true function and how it worked.
Okay, well, look, let's look at two examples, right? In 1981, the US Air Force identified a requirement for a beyond next generation craft that would replace F-16 and F-15, right? So it wasn't until 2005, that's like a quarter of a century later, that the F-22 was deployed in numbers, right? So people talking about Culvine, the Culvine UFO, that was 1990. So that would mean that if that were a technological breakthrough by the Brits or the Americans, would have had made that breakthrough in the late 1960s. I just don't buy that.
So you reckon those timescales of that 25 to 30 years, it's just too long to see that technology come through, and you would have seen it sooner than later, you think?
Well, of course you would.
It's been a tough few years for many of us, juggling a lot that life has thrown our way. As someone with a young family, finances have never been more important, especially with the soaring cost of living day to day. That's where credit.com can help. There is a way you can begin to take back some control of your financial situation. Extra Credit is a product from credit.com that gives you unmatched credit coverage. You might have checked your credit score on a free app, then when trying to make a purchase on credit, like a car, found it wasn't quite what you expected. Extra Credit from credit.com gives you access to all 28 FICO scores to see exactly what lenders will see. Extra Credit not only gives you access to those 28 FICO scores, but also helps guard your identity with $1 million ID insurance, dark web scans, and data breach alerts. Plus, you can get cash rewards for selecting personalized offers. As someone who, as a student, racked up a lot of debt, I can relate to having to rebuild my credit score as an adult. There's no better time to do this stand now. The past can't be changed, but you can begin to rebuild your future today. To sign up for extra credit, go to credit.com/thatUFO and get started there. To sweeten the deal, you can even get the first 7 days absolutely free. It's just $24.99 plus tax a month after the free trial. You can cancel any time. So go check out extra credit today and start working on your credit goals.
That is also one of the arguments, isn't it? That if the US government is in possession of those tic-tac technology, why wouldn't you see it? And one of the arguments I had seen was if Russia, China, the United States managed to get just one of those tic-tacs, the others, that would be the game over for them, wouldn't it? Because within minutes, you could put a nuclear bomb over any of those cities that they chose to, and there could be nothing done to stop it. And well, that's a rubbish, really good argument for not having that.
Look at the rubbish in, the Russian rubbish in the war for Ukraine, right? They clearly never established air supremacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the Chinese had this technology, they would already be in Taiwan. So they don't have it. I am skeptical as to the Americans have it because... America, since 1989, has been under more pressure than at any time in its history. Okay, the American-dominated world order has been threatened. Now would be the time to deploy these craft if the Americans had them.
It's probably a good thing that none of these nations do have these, if that is the case, just given the way things are going. But in terms of the technology, it's a fascinating discussion and subject, but I'm going to move on to Mads. Mads had a question, and it goes back to that October report, but picks at it a little bit more. Do you think we'll see any progress in the upcoming report in terms of the language, seeing proposals of ET hypothesis being pushed or multidimensional hypothesis?
If we're talking in terms of open source, like hearings from... Congress, no, I don't. We will be stonewalled and, we will be suffocated.
Next question from Justin, and there's two. The first one slightly again touches on what you talked about before with directed energy weapons and may have been something we actually touched upon in our first interview. But the question is, why aren't mobile phones safe and how can they be weaponized in a directed energy way?
Mobile phones can be weaponized because a malign actor can initiate a frequency that can affect you. And also, of course, even if you disable the GPS on your phone, anywhere that you move, anywhere that you go, you can be, localized, effectively by, telephone towers.
And the follow-up on that one, and I think that again is something we talked about in a little bit more detail back on the December interview, so people should check that one out. An aspect of your PDF report that Chris Mellon tweeted out a little while ago involved UAPs trying to disguise themselves as normal planes but not fully succeeding. Is that something you can comment on further?
If you look at in the Hudson Valley in the United States, northeastern United States, there are reports of UAP that mechanically change their appearance. But according to Jack Sarfati, they emit reverse Doppler effects and they are not able to mimic effectively, conventional Earth craft, either propeller-driven or jet-driven.
Why do you think one of those craft would want to mimic one of ours? Is it just to be hidden in plain sight?
Well, exactly what I would want to do if I was still in military intelligence. I would want to mimic the movements of an enemy and cover my movements.
And have you seen or heard of direct evidence of this happening even more recently?
No, I haven't. But I have to say, if that came from some kind of other intelligence, that is what I have anticipated, and that is exactly what I would do.
Fair enough. For anyone, have you seen the movie Nope that's just been in the cinema?
No, I haven't.
No, there's some interesting ideas in that, and it's been quite a divisive movie in the UFO community, but I think it's worth watching just for how it's approached, and I think it's got to be appreciated. But in that movie, the UFOs use cloud cover, and they go between, and I know that's something that many have spoken about. Is that something that also comes up in terms of hiding themselves, stealth, that they can either generate or use clouds as a way to mask themselves or hide themselves?
Well, sometimes they want to be seen, sometimes they don't want to be seen. But all I can say is, if they want to come down to Earth in physical form, then they probably want to watch out, because there are some pretty tasty blokes on Earth.
Question from Monty. He wants to know whether you are aware of any UK contractors potentially involved in back engineering or working on UAP tech, and they quote BAE Systems, for example.
Yeah, I do, and I've been recruited by one of them, and I can't say anything more than that.
But that's something you're involved with currently, yeah?
Correct.
I won't push you further on that one just yet then, Frank. Not that you would tell me anyway. And on that, Monty wants to know, and this one came in from many, many people, and it was something we talked about last year, and for quite a while was the flavour of the month and the topic of conversation on the UFO community socials, was any update on potential cataclysms that had been discussed?
I have no more information on that, but if you use your brain, open your mind, you only have to look at what's going on in Ukraine. The Russians are being pushed back. Putin is feeling, very basically, fucked in the ass. So, he could conceivably think about using attack nuke. And also, if you look at, Taiwan. So, I think it's a very, very dangerous time that could possibly contribute to a cataclysm.
A couple of questions from our friend Dave Smethurst. Dave, thanks for sending those ones in for me, sir. How far do you think it's fair to characterise the current disclosure process as being determined by a fundamental disagreement on transparency by different groups and people inside the DOD and intelligence community in the US?
Well, I've been very clear on that. I've said that Mellon and Elizondo are not about UOP transparency for the general public. They are for UAP transparency for hearings at Congress, and that they basically want to have an overarching UFO platform, a UFO project that encompasses all the current USAPs, so that America can get ahead of China before 2050.
Dave also wants to know, does Frank think there has been a core US UAP management and research group in existence since the late 40s to present day? And if yes, why have they seemingly lost their grip?
Yes, I do think there was a program between those dates that you mentioned. I don't know why they might have lost their grip, because I wasn't a part of that group.
And he also wants to know, taking it back to the UK a little bit more, it seems the MOD ran an active UAP unit through DI-55. Could Frank speculate how much reach a body like that might have had in the UK MOD and the military, and whether it had any links to the US Department of Energy via Aldermaston and related weapons development activity?
Well, I can tell you exactly what kind of links it had. It was actually of no importance whatsoever. DI-55 was basically like a bullshit program that was set up to advance some kind of UAP discussion at secret level. I was flying in AWACS at the time. I worked in military intelligence, and I can say that it was indisputable that there were interceptions between British craft and British platforms and anomalous platforms intending to enter into the British air defense identification zone.
Thank you for that. And I'm sure Dave appreciates that answer. Question from Grant, and it's something we've touched on a little bit already, but I'll just ask you to elaborate once more. And it brings in the Australian side of things as well. And a quick shout out to Grant for his work contacting officials in Australia on the UFO UAP subject. Australia, the UK and US are all Five Eyes partners and part of the AUKUS Trilateral Security Alliance. Despite both Australia and the UK having a long history of investigating UAP UFO, neither country currently have any interest in the topic whatsoever. The Australian Department of Defence, under the leadership of the Minister for Defence and Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles, has even gone as far to state there is no significant, there is no scientific or other compelling reason to divert resource to the recording and investigation of UAP. Despite not being privy to any of the classified data within classified versions of ODNI's preliminary assessment on UAP. So, Frank, in your opinion, why are both the UK and Australia burying their heads in the sand on this topic?
Very easily, because they follow the American example, okay? That's the soft answer.
And do you think essentially, and again to clear this up, we've sort of touched on this before, it's very much a subject that the US wants the control over anyway, and it seems that these other countries are happy to give them that?
I know from my own service that, and I'm going to quote the Condon report, it is indisputable that UAP exists, okay? And when I served on AWACS, it was, undoubtedly obvious to me that UAP exists and that UAP have the ability to enter the UK air defense region without, any kind of recourse that we can offer. Do I see that as a threat? Yes, I do. It's maybe it goes back to being like a paratrooper. It's like, you're trying to enter my country, fuck you, get out. Any two-star British or American general would be highly concerned by the amount of UAP activity over, sensitive British military areas, including the British nuclear base, right?
It's very interesting. And Frank, I want to finish on this one, and this was one you can give us your opinion on. From Jared, assuming governments have lots of information about the phenomenon, they would be the best suited to provide information. However, they are reluctant to provide information to protect national secrets or avoid looking incompetent. If more information about this topic is the end goal, is it better for individuals to focus on governments giving it to us or private endeavours like the Galileo Project and others?
I'll include
SCU in that as well.
Yeah, best to try and get information out of the government if you can. But hey, very good luck. Because you will never get anything out of the British government.
What about other governments?
Maybe the American government, the Spanish government, certainly. I go through Spanish military intelligence records.
I would ask Frank as well on that. What's the chances that another government from left field comes forward and takes the UFO conversation by the scruff of the neck and is the one to have that conversation on a kind of mass scale? We hear about San Marino trying to introduce this through Project Titan at the UN. Is there that opportunity or chance do you think that someone else does come out and have that conversation first?
They might do, but my information is that America definitely has crash retrievals. I know for a fact that Britain has crash retrievals. So I don't see another country gaining that kind of traction.
Frank, have you got anything you are planning on you want to talk about with the audience? Are you talking any conferences coming up soon or anything in the near future you want to mention?
No, I am still working on my investigations of directed energy weapons against scientists working in the UAP field, and that is ongoing. And I have to say that has been reported to the highest levels of the American defense and intelligence establishment, in case anybody ever wants to have a pop at me.
I'm sure there are people lining up to have a pop at you, Frank, but you usually bat them off very, very well. So I'm sure you'll continue to do so. Listen, Frank, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. For anyone who doesn't follow Frank on socials, especially Twitter, it's a wonderful conversation. Frank's got his own opinions and he's not scared to share them, as you've heard on this show as well. And it's always a pleasure to speak with you, Frank.
Yeah, good night, Andy. Thank you, mate.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's at UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque.
Did you know that podcast advertising is way more effective than display advertising? With 67% of listeners remembering brands and 63% making a purchase after hearing them. Whether you want to diversify your ad spend, add a new marketing stream, or test out podcast ads, Zencastr's creator network makes it easy for brands to connect with podcasters. Zencastr's mission is to make podcast advertisements as easy and accessible to business owners as Google or Facebook. Host-read ads like this are the most effective form of podcast advertising. Zencastr works with podcasters to help create unique to them ad spots that create brand awareness and conversion. Zencastr's creator network is the perfect place for you to get into podcast ads and sponsor your favourite creators like me. I've worked with Zencastr now for some time and they truly put the content creators and the listeners at the heart of what they do. As a huge fan of podcasts myself, and I really mean that, I love podcasts, I often buy products or services that I find useful to me based on those pods that I'm listening to. It supports them and there's usually a good discount to go along with it. So if you're interested in sponsoring this show or another podcast with adverts for your business, go to zen.ai/thatufopod1. That's the number one, or click the link in the description and fill out the contact information so Zencastr can help you bring your business story to life.